This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
It's Gasper in our Tom Ford Tire Studios. Hi, Chris.
What's up, Felgie?
How you doing?
Murray.
What up, Gasper?
Gentlemen, what's up?
I usually ask you off the air before we go on, what do you want to hit on? I neglected to do that, so I have to do it on the air. What do you want to hit on?
I love this Patriots discussion. I'm all about that, so we can do that.
Do it.
Celtics, anything you guys want to
do
talk
it.
About.
Do it.
You know, I think Devin's one of the guys down there who is able to sort of speak his mind a little bit and takes the time to try and be real and give the reporters information without going too far afield of really what they want. And when you look at what he's saying down there and in the clips that you guys are playing, I think it's pretty obvious that those guys don't think Bill made the right decision. They don't. And I don't blame, and having been in that locker room after the Super Bowl, I could sense the disappointment in losing the game, but you also sort of got the sense that they didn't feel like they put their best foot forward. And it wasn't just because they gave up 41 points and 538 yards. I mean, from a personnel standpoint.
You feel like the coaching didn't put their best foot forward.
I mean, how often does Bill say he does what's in the best interest of the team?
Every day.
How was that in the best interest of the team? You can make an argument it was in the best interest of his authority over the team, but those are two different things. You know, can you subjugate your own ego there to be able to say, okay, look, this guy did whatever he did, whether it was, you know, MFing a coach or some other scenario, but this is what gives us the best chance to win. I've made my point. It's the second half. We can't stop these guys. Let's just roll the dice and see what happens. Or is it all about maintaining your authority, your control? And it seems like it's the latter, and it wasn't the former. The former would have been rolling the dice, putting the guy in the game, and really giving your team the best opportunity to win that game. I don't think there's any way. Like, this isn't like 4th and 2, which we can all debate, right? Like, I would have punted the ball, but I see what Bill was doing there. He was trying, you can make a legitimate argument that he was trying to do what was in the best interest of the team in that game to win that game. We can disagree on it, but you cannot look at that and say that he was not trying to do what he thought
it was, a pure
was in the
football
best
decision.
Interest of the team at that right. time. How can you look at this one and say you think he's doing what he thought was in the best interest of the team?
Well, I think you're walking on Murray's side of the street, sort of the psychology of the control down there, and that was his opportunity to reassert it.
Yeah, and I think Chris thought I went a little too far with my kooky theory in that I think this correlates to Brady and how powerful he's become the last
maybe on a
three
subconscious
years.
Level. Well, but no, yeah, that's.
But
I do think you're,
the bigger you're, thing yeah. is that Belichick, I felt like, has lost control. And this one particular player, Malcolm Butler, I mean, he helped make this guy on this stage 3 years ago. You're a cog. I made you. And you're going to act up this week? No, your ass is sitting down. And I don't care how much we might need you. You're not playing in this game. And so my question now is, and Mike was just bringing this up,
yeah.
does he owe them some kind of explanation, at least the captains of the team, because could this potentially infect this team like it did the Seahawks? Well, you know, they blew that game.
Oh, wow, I never thought of that. Jeez, you're bringing in the Seahawks.
Well,
that
you know
level.
That they never got over it.
That's true. The Seahawks, they did never get it. I mean, you guys know what I say, and I say it all the time here. Winning is the ultimate deodorant. So if they go and win the Super Bowl, they're having a great year next year. Like, I don't think those guys are going to be talking about Malcolm Butler. Maybe there'll be some point where Bill addresses it and says it's behind us. The interesting thing, though, is that it's not going away.
Oh, my God, it's not going away.
And so we're at a point now, it's like by the time we get, unless something comes out and we get a definitive answer, when we get to May and there's OTAs and passing camps and that stuff, these guys are going to be asked about this. Bill's certainly going to be asked about it. Now, he'll give the stock, you know, that's in the past, that's last season, we're on to whatever, but he's at least going to be asked about it.
Okay, so this is why I asked, outside of the team, you know, does he owe answers to the team? Would Bill do himself any favors publicly by, and not, you know, not a press conference, I don't expect him to do that, but sit down with someone that he trusts, Schefter, whatever,
yeah.
Curran, and, you know, does an interview and explains himself. So there's no longer just this, you know, because it's...
There's a vacuum there.
There
right
is
now.
A vacuum.
Yeah,
right.
And we're all throwing our theories into it, and
exactly.
that's not good. But here's what I think Bill will do. If he does do that, he'll wait until after Butler signs somewhere else. You know, because then I think he can really sort of, if he has to go in on him, he can go in on him. And I do think, as much as we look at that decision and say it's not the right decision, it's damaging to Butler, it raises questions about Butler. On the flip side of that, I think Bill has enough respect for the player that if there is real dirty laundry to air, he won't do it until the guy gets his money somewhere else.
Okay, so let's mix in your phones. Here's we're so big, we have two Mike in Woburn's. This is the other Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, I have a question for you, Mike. Is this going to ruin Bill Belichick's legacy, not swallowing his pride? I mean, it ticks everybody off that they lost the game. Would George Halas or Lombardi have made that decision and not put Butler in.
So it's definitely not going to ruin it, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be, it's going to be a very, Bill's going to have a complex legacy. It's going to be Spygate, Deflategate, five championships, eight Super Bowl appearances, only 5-3 in those games.
2-3 in the last five.
Thank you, Shaughnessy. You know, the Butler thing, for he's going to have a, it's going to be a,
I don't think it's going to be that. I mean, I don't think we're going to be grouping the Butler thing in with Spygate. I don't think it's going to be that complicated. I really don't.
Well, him and the guys.
Locally, maybe, but nationally? Yeah, do you think nationally people care?
No, nationally. I think the story is Nick Foles had a transcendent game, and it was more about the Eagles than anything else.
And it's also sort of like the Patriots, you know, defense got exposed. Yeah. I don't think it's going to stick to him from a national standpoint the way the other stuff has.
But part of his legacy, even before this, always to me at least, was the ruthlessness in which he handles personnel decisions.
Yeah.
This is just another one of those.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, and I know I made this point before, and then somebody called up, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago afterwards, and said, well, you know, Bill wasn't the coach for Lawrence Taylor, so you can't bring up the example of Lawrence Taylor. Well, how about Michael Floyd? How about that one last year? The guy gets a super extreme DUI, and they sign him off waivers, and they're just because the talent's there. The talent was there, and they, so, you know, that's the thing that doesn't make sense to me, is what did he do? What did Malcolm Butler do to get to the point where Bill was like, you're not going to play at all? Because there's other guys that have done things that I would think would be a lot worse than what Malcolm Butler did, and they've gotten an opportunity here. So you don't want to use the Lawrence Taylor thing. That's fine, you know, in terms of they didn't even know if the guy was going to show up for the games on Sunday, and then he did, and he balled out every time. You want to say he wasn't the coach, you know, if you want to be in fantasy land and say that Bill, as the head coach, would have been like, no, Lawrence, you can't play today, you know, against the Redskins in this NFC East clash. Yeah, if you want to, fine. But what about somebody like Michael Floyd? All kinds of exceptions made for that guy.
They just did it this year with Kenny Britt. They barely used him, but that guy's a legendary a-hole.
So what did Butler do would justify it to that level?
And just to carry this example, don't tell me that during Randy Moss's days here that he made every meeting was on time for, you know, it took Bill, at the very end, he sent him home when Randy didn't show up for a practice. But you think that was the first time Randy didn't show up for a practice? Or was Randy's talent so amazing in 07 when he first got here that it doesn't, you're playing? I mean, that's Bill's track record. That's every coach's track record.
Exactly. I agree. It's not specific to him. That's the way it is in the NFL. I mean, like I've always said this. They take 53 axe murderers if it could help them win. I mean, that's what it's about.
They took Aaron Hernandez. What more do you need to know? Tommy and Milton. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hi, Mikey. Just a couple of points here. And if you can give me a couple extra seconds. First, one quick thing on the Bruins. Mikey, if with Chara's age and Bergeron's age, you know, I'm tired of I'm not tired of it. He's got to stop the conservative aspect. I know he's made a couple of trades. But if you want to win for Chara and Bergeron, do something big like Nash coming in before Monday. That's my first thing. Mike, yesterday you hit it right on the head. You're the only one with any balls to say, you know something? Belichick, with the Brady deal, you said, well, Brady's still the greatest quarterback in the league. And, you know, you had no problems with him trading Garoppolo up. What has happened is Belichick screwed up. Back in April of last year, it was the return. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo, we'll see in a couple of years how great he's going to be. But in the return.
Let me stop you, Tommy. You know, because we're talking about, and thank you for the call. We're talking about Belichick's legacy and is this going to stick? The number one on my list is the return on Garoppolo. I am sorry. That is worse than the stupidity of Spygate. You know, that's pretty bad, too. I mean, everyone calls you cheaters because Bill just couldn't tell the guy to turn the camera off. Like, that's bad. The reason everyone thinks you cheat is because Bill kept butting his head against the wall with that filming stuff in New York. Like, that was stupid. But the Garoppolo thing, that's worse. All you had to do was pick up the phone from Cleveland, and you're sitting here with the fourth pick. You get to automatically reload at quarterback. Or if you don't like the quarterbacks, you get to trade down for multiple firsts, you get to reset your entire thing. You've punted on the draft two straight years. If you pick up the phone from Cleveland, you're sitting here with the draft capital to restock the whole thing. And he, what, wanted to take care of the kid?
Well, I mean, it's what it feels like.
Well, thought the kid was going to be here, I think, longer.
Yeah, so my hand has been forced. You're forcing me to move on, and I'm using
even at that
here,
point, Sashi Brown, they,
yeah, no, I know.
Cleveland called him 3 days before the trade. I think the Browns said they called on Friday. And Bill wouldn't talk to them.
So much like,
and then on Monday he wakes up and hands them to Shanahan.
Okay, but let me look at the flip side of it though. If you're Bill and what is better for your legacy, that Garoppolo goes to San Francisco and turns into a great quarterback, or that he goes to Cleveland and collapses and fails?
I agree. But it's unconscionable. Is that what's in the best interest of the team?
Yeah, that benefits
no,
you,
but,
not
but
the team.
Exactly. That's my point. But I'm just saying, there's another side of that. Like, there's the return for the team and the return for you.
Oh, I get it. I get all the permutations and all the ramifications. You want to give me Spygate. You want to give me Deflategate. You want to give me 4th and 2. You want to give me Malcolm Butler. You want to give me the mortar kick against the Eagles. Name them all. The Garoppolo thing is the worst. Number one. Number one on the list.
Wow.
Especially if he goes on to be something. Oh, you'll never live it
down.
Oh,
if he becomes like Aaron Rodgers, or even if he wins one title, this will trump the Herschel Walker trade as like the biggest ripoff.
But you're right, Jim. But here's the thing. Will that trade get pinned to Bill, or will it get pinned to the Crafts?
So the fact that they traded him is on Kraft. The return's on Bill. The return's on Bill. I'm sorry. He could have handled that whole thing a lot differently. If the order was to get rid of Garoppolo, fine. You have to do what your boss tells you to do at some point. But then that's up to you who you talk to and where you send them. Oh, my God. No, that's the worst.
The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
What's really interesting here, Malcolm Butler, hero 3 years ago in the Super Bowl, has not played a defensive snap tonight. The Patriots are telling us a coach's decision. Of course, it was easier to get information out of East Germany before the wall went down than to get injury information from New England. But Butler has not played a defensive snap yet. Eric Rowe has taken his spot. Here's a giant. It's wrapped up 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. This was during America the Beautiful. Butler was very emotional on the sideline. You can't guess what this was about, but he's played on special teams tonight, but not on defense.
Well, it was a beautiful rendition, so you never know, right? But you have to think that maybe he was hurting a bit, and you just wonder when it was that he got the news, or maybe it was just a reaction to it, maybe it wasn't any of the above.
I think just the fact that Devin McCourty's answering the questions is telling Chris, as opposed to Devin saying, you know, I'm just getting ready for 2018. That's in the past. I'm getting ready for 2018.
Yeah, but he's one of the guys that he answers questions down there. Didn't he win the media? I think he won the Nice Guy Award from the media.
He's an actual human being?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. There are guys, and they've been in the past. You know, you've seen him. There are guys who are good at, they can walk the line, right? Where they're able to give you something, but they're not giving you so much that they're drawing the attention of the coaching staff, the coach, you know, the coach's personal handler, all that stuff. You know, and Devin's one of those people where he's very adept at it. He takes the time to sort of think about, like, the comments you're talking, like, I don't think what he said was terrible.
It's not incendiary.
It's just for the Patriots. It's more than you're used to. Exactly.
Well, no,
Jim.
Exactly. Anything beyond
that's
in the past and we're moving to 2018 is, I think, telling. Any question that's entertained beyond that answer is, tells me something. It just does.
But should they be over it, these players?
No.
Yeah, of course not.
Nope. Because that one may have cost him another championship. Scott in New Hampshire here on Agenda Free Friday has a thought for Gasper. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
We're good.
Hey, so question about the Celtics moving forward. A couple I was at the Paul Pierce game, and one of the most fun things about that game that you didn't really see from TV was the jarring back and forth between LeBron and KG on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And during one of those interviews, KG had said his biggest regret was not coming to Boston anytime sooner. Now, all of a sudden, KG is in Anthony Davis's ear telling him those same things. Do you think it's possible that KG is lobbying, trying to build the Celtics up to get back at LeBron? One. And then two, if you were going to make that trade, and I know it's all hypothetical, we know we'd have to part with either Brown or Tatum. Which of those two would you be more willing to part with?
Okay, so the first thing, I'll just weigh in. I do believe that Garnett's acting as an agent for the Celtics there. I do. And I said yesterday, Chris, two things sort of happened right after that Paul Pierce jersey retirement is that Rondo got all up in Isaiah's face and they got in that little spat. And then Garnett comes out and starts talking about, you know, I really regret I should have asked for that trade earlier. And I left some championships on the table, etc. Sort of talking to Anthony Davis. And I just sort of say, well, both those guys were just in Greenlandia. They were just on planet Zippy with all the green teamers. And
acting as de facto ambassadors for the team.
Exactly. So they all get their green on here with the Pierce thing, and then they all spread out and do the Celtics bidding.
Greenlandia, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Rondo gets in Isaiah's face to stand up for the, you know, and then Garnett does his thing. And so I do think it's all related. Are you still, have you changed your mind on Tatum Brown as this year has played out?
No, I mean, I still would.
You've always been a Brown guy,
I'm
right?
a Brown guy. I just think the upside's, you know, higher there. Will he ever reach it? I don't know. I mean, Tatum is more polished. Tatum's a better offensive player right now. There's no question about it. But I feel like if Jaylen Brown reaches his ceiling, he's a better player because he's a better athlete. And I look at that, and there's just something about Brown, that attack mentality. You know, I sort of call it that Kobe mentality. Like, you can just see that he wants to be great, that he wants to be the man, that he elevates his game when they play the Warriors. He enjoys that challenge. There's something about his mentality that that really is appealing to me.
Are you giving up for Anthony Davis if that's what it takes?
Tatum?
Or Brown?
No,
you got to answer the question.
Oh, you're making it hard. I mean,
hold on.
But it's supposed to be one or the other. Would I give up Tatum for Anthony? Yes.
Would you give up Brown for Anthony Davis? I can't believe you're hesitating.
Wow.
I'm hesitating, yes.
Yeah, see, Tatum is my hard no. Brown and the pick, I could be talked into. I probably would do it.
But I just think there's something there with Brown where he could be really special. He might never come close to it. It's a big risk. But there's something there I see in the athleticism and the mentality and just his improvement already from year one to year. I mean, he's the second leading scorer on the team. He's far from a finished product, don't get me wrong. But I think the upside there is really great.
I'm sorry, who's the second leading scorer on the team?
Jaylen Brown.
He's the second leading scorer on the team? Man, knock me over with a feather. I never would have guessed that.
Don't you think he's been relying on the three a little bit too much the last couple weeks before the All-Star
break?
He's
fallen in love with it a little bit.
That's driven me
nuts. Then
there's
threes like that one against the Wizards where it's just like, yeah, I want this shot in this situation. Step back, you're all over me. I got that. And I love that. I love that he rises to the occasion, that he's not afraid of the moment. And he's a better defender than Tatum already. But Tatum's the more finished product, more polished player.
Andrew and Sterling has a Red Sox thought for us. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going? All week, you and Matt have been saying that, you know, the Red Sox, they're not going to do anything because they didn't make these big trades and what have you, and all they did was get a rookie coach. But it's the same thing that the Bruins did. They changed the coach. They got rid of that Muppet, Farrell, and Julian. And look at them. They're the best team in the league now. So why isn't it possible for the Red Sox for that to happen?
It's not. It's not, but there's a couple differences. One is
Cassidy had been in the system. He was down in Providence. Well, he knew the young players.
Cassidy changed the system. He changed how they played.
Well, Corey's going to change. They're going to be more aggressive early in the count.
Okay,
it's all about launch angle.
So this is my question. Is Cora changing their launch angle akin to the system change that Cassidy brought in?
Well, I don't know because I'm not enough of a hockey person, so I don't know how much Cassidy changed, you know, their system.
I think he did pretty substantially.
I mean, was it a drastic change?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, so I can't speak to that, but the approach, look, we all listened to the owner. John Henry was down there, and he talked about the need for a change in approach from the team, and Coors talked about, what was it he said? I can't remember the player he was talking about, but he said, you know, a bad take.
Is it Bogarts?
Was it Bogarts he was talking about? He was saying, you know, a bad take is like just as bad as, you know, like a swing and miss or whatever he said there. So I think you're going to have a markedly different approach, and he was saying the idea is if your pitch goes right down the middle and you take it, that might be the best pitch you have to hit the entire at bat, and you let that go. I mean, that's like as bad as popping up.
And let's not forget about the fun. That's really the important thing.
The slide whistles, right?
Yeah. Oh, what was it? Well, have a seat over here, David, won't you? Oh, you got me again. Oh, this is so much fun in this clubhouse now. Fun. Enough with the fun.
Where are you on the Red Sox there, Chris?
I mean, I think that they're relying, obviously, an awful lot on Alex Cora to come in and sort of change the environment there, but I think it's incumbent upon the players. It starts with them, and it means having different leaders. It means that other guys emerge, whether it's Bogarts, whether it's Betts, whether it's Bradley Jr., and they become the face of the team, the voice of the team, as opposed to Pedroia and Price. Or there has to be a sort of passing of the torch there, or at least, to use Pedroia's words, at least they have to share that mantle. It can't be just these veteran guys, because I thought that they sort of set a sour tone last year, particularly Price. And I just, in general, don't believe in the pitcher as leader. I think these guys are too high strung. They get to do their job once every 5 days, and they tend to dwell on that performance. Baseball is a game predicated on failure. You need guys that can brush it off. Normally, pitchers are not those guys.
Any concern about J.D. Martinez and why he can't pass this physical, apparently?
No, but you know what I'm more concerned about? The idea that they sort of are going to, that they told him when he came here that they'd find places for him to play the outfield. And that if he's going to be the fourth outfielder and they're going to be in a situation where they're catering to him, which is how they've gotten in trouble in the past. Do you know, like, I think it's the last 2 years or two out of the last 3 years he got hurt playing the outfield? You know, last year he got this foot injury playing the outfield, and then in 16 he fractured his elbow in the outfield making a catch. I don't want this guy in the outfield. Like, you took the money, you're here to DH, that's what you're going to do. We're not going to, look, if there's an opportunity and somebody's hurt and you have to play the outfield, fine. But we're not going to have, like, once or twice a week you get to play the outfield because you like playing the outfield and because if you opt out, you're going to have more value on the market because you're a position. No, you took the money, you know what we need. We need your bat, that's all we care about. Just DH. Like, that's it. DH.
See how that plays out. Rob in Bellingham is waiting patiently with a quick Bruins thought. Go ahead, Rob.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? Big fan of you guys. Think you're very insightful. I love the Bruins. Love everything Cassidy's doing with them. I just don't think Tuca can raise his game to bring him a cup. I don't think he's that goaltender. Your thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot of people who feel the same way. Big prove-it year for Rask. Hasn't, you know, couldn't get him into the playoffs for two straight years. Hasn't went around and going on three-plus years now. You're probably going to get Toronto in the first round if this stays the way it is. You should beat Toronto. You should be a better goalie than Anderson, who they have there in Toronto. There's no excuse.
You should beat Toronto? I mean, to me, that series is a toss-up.
It's close. I agree. It's close. But Rask should be the better goalie than Frederick Anderson.
Well, yes, I agree with that.
Okay, so, I don't want to see...
But I think Rask has to face a better offensive attack. Doesn't that balance it out?
We'll see. I can tell you who Tuca wasn't the better goalie in the first round series against Ottawa last year, and Ottawa's still a better team. I thought Rask was lousy in a couple of games, and he didn't do it last year. But, you know, last year half of his defense was hurt. You know, they were all banged up. Team probably wasn't ready at that stage, so I'm not blaming Rask for that. Just no excuses this time.
No, but I have to believe that if Hudobin continues to play as well as he has, you can give more rest to Rask as we go along here.
Another reason he should be good in the playoffs.
Right. A rested Rask should give you his best
game. That's a good point, Jim.
You're rested. Team's good on D. They're ready to go. You have a beatable opponent. You know, again, maybe the teams are a toss-up, but it's not like last year where I think you were a prohibitive underdog against Ottawa. So no excuses. Let's see it.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The obstacle is travel, and it's not tradition, in my mind at least. It's that as we've added an extra week to the regular season, as we've tried to reduce the number of back-to-backs, that we are concerned about teams crisscrossing the country. Having said that, you'd like to have a format where your two best teams are ultimately going to meet in the finals. And obviously, if it's the top team in the East and the top team in the West, I'm not saying this is the case this year, but you could have a situation where the top two teams in the league are meeting in the conference finals or somewhere else. So we're going to continue to look at that. And it's still my hope that we're going to figure out ways. Maybe ultimately you have to add even more days to the season to spread out a little bit more to deal with the travel. Maybe air travel will get better. All things we'll keep looking at.
I love the idea, Gasper.
I love it, too. I think it's a good way to differentiate the NBA playoffs. I think it would make it more exciting. And I think that, like Silver said, it creates the opportunity in a given year where if you have the two best teams are in the East or in the West, hey, let them meet in the finals.
And it's not just that. I think it spices up the early rounds.
Well, that's the number one thing. I agree.
I think there's more compelling matchups. I mean, I'm eyeballing it, but, you know, the Celtics right now, it, as it stands, are going to face, I don't know, Milwaukee, Detroit. I think it's Detroit would be their first-round matchup right now, where if you just threw it all into one pot, 1-16, it's something like, I don't know, did you write this? Was it Memphis or Denver or something like that?
No, it would be like Portland.
Portland
and I think if under the current system, I don't know the standings from last night if anything changed. I know the Sixers won, so I don't know if that flipped the standings, but I think it would be the Sixers for them.
Okay, but either way, I think it's like, I don't know. There's just some variety in there, and there's a little bit of a college feel to it. Where
and right out the gate, you're getting a more competitive matchup.
Well, I don't know if you can guarantee that, Murray, but I think you can guarantee a difference in styles. Or, you know, in the NCAA tournament, a Big Ten team faces an ACC team. How do they match up?
Yeah.
Now you have an Eastern Conference team and a Western Conference team, and they're usually different. There's usually different styles, East to West. Is usually just the way it seems to work, and a little bit of an unknown quality, like you get in the NCAA tournament, a little bit of clash of styles, a little bit of clash of locations, and I just think that adds a little... I would be so much more interested. I just think it'd be cooler to be Celtics-Blazers versus Celtics-Pistons. I don't know. I just think that's more interesting.
I agree with you, and I think the number one thing there is it could spice up the first couple of rounds, because the last couple of years, I get the sense that everybody is just sort of like, all right, just fast forward to the finals.
They're perfunctory.
The ratings were up last year for the NBA playoffs, but the total viewership was down because so many of those series were non-competitive. Obviously, the Wizards-Celtics series was a very compelling series. I don't know if people felt that way nationally. Locally, certainly, people here did. And I think if you're an objective basketball fan, you're really into hoops, you looked at that series and you enjoyed it. But at the same time, did anybody look at that series and say one of these two teams is going to win the championship?
Of course not.
No. There's no way.
So the early rounds, it spices, and it does give you a chance of a better final.
Yeah, if it turns out that Houston is a better matchup for the Warriors than anybody coming out of the East, which is entirely possible, then in a given year, you could have that. And I think the example I used in the column was 2002, when everybody knew that Lakers-Kings epic Western Conference final, where the Kings got absolutely hosed.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the NBA finals there. I mean, those were the two best teams. You had a 61-win Kings team. You had Shaq and Kobe with the Lakers in their prime. That was it, and you knew it that year, and the West had the four best records in the league that year. So if you get a year like that, you're in a situation where those two teams could meet in the finals, and it would really mean something versus having them meet in a Western Conference final, and then you get to the NBA finals, and it feels, you know, anticlimactic. So
yeah, I think they're headed there, and I think they need it for the early rounds as much as anything, just because the nature of basketball. It's just the top two seeds always advance. It's just the way it works in that league. If you can throw some sort of wrinkle that, you know,
yeah.
And I think an East-West wrinkle just gives that a little more, makes it a little more compelling.
Well, like one of the matchups, if they did it this year, like right now, would be your Bucks versus the Timberwolves, who have the longest active playoff drought in the NBA. And so that'd be a great matchup. Karl Anthony Towns for the T-Wolves, Wiggins for the T-Wolves, Antetokounmpo for the Bucks with Malcolm Brogdon and Bledsoe. That would be a really fun series, I think, to watch, and people would be into it. Two young teams that look like they're rising up, and only one of them can advance. That would be a fun series.
So yeah. If this is such a no-brainer, why are
the travel
people against it?
Oh, okay, so that's another thing that bugs me.
The travel.
F the travel. Big deal. It's the same amount of off days. All it is is a couple extra hours in the air.
Yeah, but they've done a lot to try and reduce the travel for these guys and the wear. And I always go back, you know, people, I know what you're saying, but when people say, forget the travel, I go back to covering the 2010 NBA Finals, Celtics-Lakers. By the time those teams played Game 7, they were done. That was a terrible basketball game. Kobe hitting the side of the backboard, guys missing free throws, Rasheed Wallace dry heaving on the court. Like, those people, they were out of gas. Like, you know, that travel, when it's transcontinental and there's time changes and you're going across three time zones, it does take it out of guys. I mean, I've seen it from covering that series. And by the time we got to the end, it was a bad product. And I think that's what they don't want. They don't want the Celtics to have to go to Portland while, like, under this system, Toronto, as of yesterday at the start of play, would have played the 76ers in the first round. You don't think that's an advantage?
Was Celtics-Lakers a bad product in the 80s?
No, it wasn't, but Celtics-Lakers in the 80s is why they went to 2-3-2, which they've gone away from now, and now in the finals, it's just 2-2-1-1-1. Celtics-Lakers in the 80s, that's why they went to 2-3-2.
No, but the Celtics-Lakers in the 80s was 2-2-1-1-1.
The first one was. The other ones were 2-3-2.
So, sorry, in 85 they went 2-3-2?
Yeah, they switched it up because of the travel, because of complaints. Mainly from the media.
I was going to say, no, I thought they did it so they can set up all the media stuff. That's what I really thought it was. I don't want to hear about the travel. I mean, if you're schlepping to the airport and getting on a plane and you're flying to Detroit or Portland, all that is 3 extra hours in the air. All the other machinations are the same.
But you're changing time zones, and that messes with your body.
Come on. What? They're all up till 5 in the morning anyway at the club. You know what
that's not
like,
true.
Give me a break.
That's not
of course
the case.
Yes, it is.
Well, if
no,
you can't sleep, take an Ambien or smoke weed. Like, figure it out.
I don't want to hear about the travel. I mean, to me, they should do it. It would just spice it up. The NBA, in the first couple rounds especially, needs it. It needs it because there's just not enough competitive series.
So my answer to your question, would be for the first round, at least, go to the 2-3-2.
Yeah, sure. Fine.
No, just switch to that. So the Celtics make one trip to Portland and play three games, and that's it. You know, go 2-3-2 for that.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. I want to get back to being a team that, you know, finds a way. And does so because it competes at the highest of levels on every possession. You know, we haven't been a perfect team all year, but what we have done for, you know, especially the early part of the year was we competed, we found a way. And I think that we have to put every piece of energy into that. We have to play better than we did heading into break. You know, as I said before, you know, everybody had the same All-Star break. So to say that, you know, we were looking ahead to break or whatever the case may be. Well, everybody else was in the same boat, too. The bottom line is that's no excuse for poor performance. And we had a few of those heading into break. And, you know, we better play a lot better here over the next 23 games. Because if we stay at the level we've been playing at, it's not good enough.
That's amazing. It's not really that long. I mean, just think about that. You know, 20 games, you're pretty much going to have a beat on where you're at, where you sit, and who you're going to be.
The sense of urgency better be really high coming into today. There's no question.
I think that little tailspin there into the All-Star break got their attention. Three games behind Toronto in the loss column for top of the Eastern Conference. Cleveland was coming up their backside as well. Cleveland was three games behind you until last night. Cleveland at home against the Bullets without John Wall, and they lose.
Bullets.
Seriously. Yeah, so, I don't know. How do you handicap the East right now?
I still think that it will come down to the Celtics and the Cavs. I'm just not a believer in the Raptors. I've seen it too many times. I like their team, but I just don't think it's a team that's built to win.
They're mentally weak.
You always say this. You do say that. I mean, I don't think it's a team that has enough to win against Cleveland or the Celtics in a seven-game playoff series. I don't. I think Toronto could definitely give the Celtics a tough series, and if the Celtics are going to play defense like this, then they'll lose it. But the Celtics at their best and the Raptors at their best, I'll take the Celtics.
How do you feel about the Celtics' chances versus the Cavs? Seven games tonight, who do you like?
Cavs. Those trades they made, first of all, it's not just that they're a better team with these guys. It's that they're a different team. Better outside shooting. Better defense. George Hill is a fantastic on-the-ball defender.
Did you watch last night?
I didn't watch last night. I saw them when they came here, and I saw them when they played OKC. First game after the All-Star break, that might be when I give you the, like, guys have been out till 5 a.m. A couple of days in a row after that All-Star break.
Because those two attributes that you talked about, which were blatantly obvious in those games that they played,
yeah.
Last night it was completely missing. The defense sucked in the second half, and they couldn't hit a three.
Yeah, I didn't see the game, and I know there was poor. George Hill, I think, was like, 2 for 14? He shot terribly. But from what I saw in the first two games they played with that group, just the bounciness, the energy, and the biggest thing, the biggest point I want to make is that even though we're different, it seemed like LeBron reengaged. Like he looked at it and said, "Oh, I like playing with these guys. Like, okay, now I'm reengaged in this and I'm reinvigorated." And I think that's a whole different story for that team, because I think LeBron was resigned to the fact that the team they had before, not only was it not fun to play on, sorry Jim, but also they weren't going to make, you know, he felt like we're not good enough. This isn't going to be good enough.
Okay, Celtics in a vacuum. You concerned about them? Was that dip, is it water seeking its level or just the ups and downs of the season?
I think it's more just the ups and downs of the season. What's shocking to me was sort of the defensive breakdown. And when you look at the numbers for those last five games, and we talked about on the Celtics show last week, just some of those numbers, the fast break points are up. You know, normally they allow 9.9 per game. During this little stretch losing 4 out of 5 here, it was 14 per game. The three-point percentage during this five-game stretch, opponents are shooting 43.3% from three. That's the lowest in the league during that stretch. They normally do a much better job than that. So I feel like defensively things got lax and there were lapses, and I think that that's something that they can fix. I also think some guys started to equate their offense too much with their defense. In other words, they're too focused on, okay, you know, I keep hearing we need more consistent scoring, so they're fixated and focused on that, and they sort of forgot why they're there and really what was helping the team in the beginning of the year. And I put Terry Rozier there. Like, Rozier's a very good on-ball defender, and I thought watching the last 4 to 5 games that his defense, it just wasn't as good, and also that in transition he was just losing people, just losing. You can't lose guys in transition like that.
Okay, so Smart's back. He's an interesting guy to watch.
He
really cost himself, cost them that stupidity out in Los Angeles. He's playing for a contract, maybe playing for a Celtics future. Like, I think there's just a lot on that kid.
There is. There's a lot of pressure there. I think it's a little unfair. Beatles, right, and we hear that promo. He does add an edge to them, and he is an outstanding defender, one of the most versatile defenders in the NBA. But to just sort of assume that he's going to come back and fix all their problems, I don't think that's really fair to him, to be honest. I mean, he deepens the rotation. He certainly should add to the defense. But their defense was good because they were a great team defense team. And that's not what we saw leading up to the All-Star break. I think you had a lot of slippage there. And that's why Brad, in those comments that he's making, is sort of being very matter-of-fact. And you can sense the sense of urgency in him that he doesn't want this to become the new normal, this sort of level or lack of focus that they have. He doesn't want that to become the new normal for them because he knows it's not good enough.
Let's grab a call here. Jay and Shirley. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how are you guys? Great show. Thanks for taking the call. Really quick, just with the Celtics kind of on a slide, with the Bees dealing with kind of like peaking early, with Martinez still not really being a part of the team, with the Pats, all that behind-the-scenes nonsense. As far as, quote-unquote, this year, as far as, like, seasons that are going to end in 2018 or begin in 2018, as far as the Big Four, who do you think has the best shot, is in the best place to go all the way this year?
Okay, that old question. Who's in the best position to win a championship?
Well, the Pats. As long as it's still Brady Belichick, it's going to be the Patriots.
It is. I think there's only one team with no chance.
The Celtics, yeah.
Celtics.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And it's a commentary on the sport. I mean, yeah. I think the Celtics are the second-best team in town. But it's
that's
just
more about the Golden State Warriors and the NBA. You're
it's
right.
just the way yeah. it works. It's just yeah. the way it works in that league. You can't pull an upset like that. I give the Bruins a 5% chance to win the Cup.
Oh, I think it's more than that based on the unpredictability of that league's playoffs. I mean, if Rask gets hot and they continue to play like this, anything could happen.
They're going to run through Washington and Pittsburgh, and then they're going to run through who's ever out west. I don't know. I mean, you want to tell me they can win a round or two? Sure, they should be able to. I don't give them great odds there, but I give them some odds. I give the Celtics zeros. Zeros. They're not going to beat the Warriors. I mean, that sucks, and that's what sort of sucks about the NBA.
I mean, I would give them more than zero chance to beat. And what if Hayward comes back?
Zero.
Still zero.
Coming back with a shattered ankle after being out all year? Zero.
I'd give them more than zero. It's low, but it's more than zero to me.
Okay. I think the Red Sox, I mean, I'm not high on them, but they have a shot. Yeah. They could.
I'd give them like 7%.
They have the best pitching in the league.
Ooh.
Is it the best pitching in the playoffs, or is it regular season only?
Yeah, well, regular it's regular season, but
win a game for me in the playoffs. And is Rick Porcello going to be Rick Porcello, Cy Young Porcello, or last year Porcello, which he's made
Fair
most
enough.
Of his career?
Verlander, Keuchel, who's their third?
Well, they made a trade for Garrett Cole, so he would be their third
okay.
on papers.
I'm sorry?
Lance McCullers.
You know, but whoever, they've won in the postseason, unlike your guys. I mean, that's fair. But the pitching is there. I mean, if Price is healthy and Sale is Sale, and Porcello is somewhere in between the Cy and what he was last year, like, that's pretty good.
Dodgers are way better than you. Cubs are way better than you. I mean, most of them. Maybe even the Diamondbacks. I don't know. Like, I give that Red Sox
and
team
just
very
because,
little chance.
And just because Maz isn't here, I have to throw the Yankees in there as well.
Yeah, Yankees obviously are better than you. I mean, they went deeper in the playoffs than you last year. Those guys haven't won a playoff game. Their only playoff winner since their last couple of runs was Doug Fister.
But they're going to have fun this year, Murray.
Oh, got to have fun. Let's dance it up, Chris. You want to?
Woohoo! Jackie Bradley had fun last year. He's good. He's set.
It's true. You don't like the wind dance for Pete?
I'm over it. I used to like it, but no, maybe it's just too much negativity rubbing off me.
I think
Mike
it's too much. I like that. I like wind dance.
No, it got real old real quick.
I think it's cool. I like it.
Oh, it's so
plus.
Not cool.
Would they do it if JD Martinez is out there? And what is the likelihood
he'll probably
get hurt doing
strain exactly. Lisfranc?
Yeah, we'll get a Lisfranc injury, Lisfranc, whatever that is. Yeah, he'll end up with that injury if he tries to. Well, that would be so Red Sox if he hurt himself doing the wind dance.
I'm dying for it. Oh, please! If there is a God, he rips a hamstring doing that stupid thing. Do we have a Gasper Murray extravaganza?
Yes, we do. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a Celtics win. They're back.
So this is tomorrow at 11 a.m.?
11 to 2, but noon we do the Celtics show. And I also want to know if Chris is with me in the Patriots not drafting a quarterback this year.
So that's a big thing. Murray wants
no
quarterback.
Tune in for that. Yeah,
no
tune
QBs.
In for that. And I also have a thought on Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl and whether it plays into his favor or works against him. Just the whole setup of having 2 weeks there.
Oh, okay,
are you guys stupid?
We're not, man. We're going to have to listen tomorrow at 11 o'clock to find out what that means. Thanks for coming in, Chris.
Good to see you.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.